Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to The Parenthood. Eleanor Roosevelt once said, "I think at a child's birth, if a mother could ask a fairy godmother to endow it with the most useful gift, that gift should be curiosity." Well, I'm totally with her. In my mind, curiosity is a necessity. It's something I admire in others, and as annoying as my incessant questions might be to my husband, it's something I celebrate in myself. When I strip back what traits of mine I'd like my children to inherit, curiosity is at the top of the list. I want them to grow up asking questions, exploring the world they live in with open eyes. I fiercely believe that a passion for learning is one of the greatest gifts you can give your kids. Which is all very well, but how do we do that? How can we encourage curiosity in our children? Well, with me today, I've got someone who has built a career on her curiosity. Molly Oldfield describes herself as a font of useless information. One of Stephen Fry's QI elves, researching obscure facts for the BBC Two programme QI, she now hosts her own podcast, Everything Under the Sun, a kind of QI for children, which I have to say, my children and I are addicted to. Welcome, Molly. Thank you so much for coming to The Parenthood.
Thanks so much, Marina.
I mean, obviously, curiosity has been a big part of your life. Was that something that was always there from when you were small, or was it something your parents fostered?
I think it was always there. I mean, I remember when I got the job on QI, which was the first job I got when I left university, my grandparents' friends were just like, I don't know why it's my grandparents' friends specifically, but I remember them saying, that's the perfect job for you. You always ask why about everything. Why is the sky blue? They answer it, but why? And my mum said the same thing. You were always asking me questions all the time. So yeah, I think it's probably always there, but I think it's also there in most children, to be honest.
And I mean, they specifically picked you, didn't they? I mean, they approached you for QI, didn't they?
So. They did actually. Yeah, I was lucky. I met John Lloyd, who's the producer of QI, when I was still at university, and we had lunch and he sort of laid out the grand master plan. And he said, do you want a job starting in September? And I was like, yes, perfect. That would be great. And yeah. It was very different at the beginning to how it is now, because it was before the TV show was actually commissioned. So it was just a pilot on a VHS. And yeah, we just sat in a room. Well, no, we were in this place, small office called the Oxford Centre of Innovation in Oxford, with big piles of books, lots of magazines and pictures drawn by elephants on the wall. And we just read lots of books.
And it wasn't Googling then?
Well, it was really before the internet. I mean, I remember when Wikipedia sort of, we found it. And we were like, God, there's this thing called Wikipedia and it's got like answers to things. But it was very early days, so there wasn't that much. Like now you can look up almost anything you want, like the biggest owl in the world and find out everything about it. But then you couldn't. There were only like a few Wikipedia pages. So you really were much more analog. We would read encyclopedias, particularly the 1911 edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We used to love reading that. And we'd go out to exhibitions. Every Friday we'd have a quite interesting lunch where people would come and we'd just chat about ideas. We went to lectures, we did all kinds of things, and just every time sort of slowly trained our brains to look for things that might make good QI questions when we're out and about.
And when you were a child and you were constantly asking why,
yeah.
Did you feel that people answered your questions, or were you often told, oh, I don't know? Because it can, as a parent, I mean, you're a parent too,
yeah.
Now, that questioning is wonderful, but it can be quite exhausting.
I don't actually remember my constant questioning. I'm just told that I did that. And so I think they must have been sort of answered, because otherwise I probably have a feeling of being quite, you know, dissatisfied. I think that, yeah, I think my mom took time to answer questions. I think my grandparents, you know, they had a lot more time. They would definitely be slowing things down. And I remember this lovely thing with my grandpa. We went off to the greengrocers and we bought 10 different types of apples and we sat down together and tasted each one and we'd talk about the difference in taste. So we'd be like, a Pippin's apple tastes like this and a Granny Smith is much more crunchy. And just, I think things like that, it wasn't so much sort of the big questions. It's just sort of paying attention to the everyday things.
And then that's so right, you know, the everyday things like apples that you take for granted. And yet there are, I mean, you probably know the answer to this. There are something like 700 different types of apples in the world, aren't there?
All with different tastes. And, you know, if you could think an apple's an apple. But like you say, yeah, they're all completely different, each with different stories about who cultivated them, where they come from. So, yeah, you could write a book about apples for sure.
You said that you believe all children are innately curious.
I do.
But do you think that if you'd been born into a very different life, you might not have been able to indulge that curiosity?
I suppose if you happen to have a family who... I don't know.
Can't give you the time. You know, yeah, just talking about like your grandfather, yeah. Like that simple little action.
Yeah, exactly.
It's that time, really.
I think it's time. I don't think that it needs to cost anything to nurture a child's creativity. I think it's purely attention and time, especially now, you know, we can find out the answers to things incredibly easily because of Google, because of Wikipedia. We can go to libraries. It's just about putting in the time to think, oh, my little one wants to know this. I'm going to actually sit down with them and find out the answer to what they want to know. And also notice what they're interested in and follow their lead. Mm. So if they happen to be interested in, you know, elephants, well, let's go and read about them. Let's go perhaps to the zoo and see them. You can look on TV. You can, you know, there's so many ways that you can start exploring the things that they're interested in.
And actually, that's quite a nice way to have a conversation with children, because I find it's not always easy to chat with your children. You really want to. You know, I find myself, I don't see enough of them during the sort of week, and I sit down and I think, well, let's have dinner together. And then they aren't great at conversation, you know, unless it's sort of being silly. They're not brilliant. But I think it's more that we're maybe not brilliant at having conversations with children. They maybe need a bit more direction than you or I would if we sit down, you know, for a cup of coffee.
Mm, that could be true. Yeah. I mean, my little one's only two, so it's quite hard to know, but he's very chatty. And I do tend to find, like, children, I don't know, if you get them talking about the things that they want to talk about, I hope that, you know, they can talk about those kinds of things.
And, I mean, this might be seem really obvious to you, but why do you think it's so important for us to nurture curiosity in children?
Well, because... almost anything that ever happened of interest on Earth happened because of curiosity. Like how inventions, explorations, but also, you know, how you met your husband. Everything will be about curiosity. You think, oh, I'm interested in that person. I want to find out more. Oh, it's a beautiful day. I'm going to go for a walk in the park. And, oh, I'll walk that way because look at that beautiful statue. I might go and find out who it is. And then maybe I'll find out, you know, what that person did. And I don't know, the more curious you are, I think the bigger and more adventurous your life is going to be. I have a picture that my mum gave me and it says, blessed are the curious because they will have adventures. And I think that that is absolutely true. The more you are curious, the more you follow that curiosity, the more, you know, the bigger and richer your life will be.
Well, and often questions and facts lead to more questions. So yeah. You might think, I kind of know everything about elephants, but then you delve a little bit more deeply and you've got 100 more questions about elephants, and that presumably then translates into every part of life.
Exactly.
I remember taking my son bike riding around the park. I try and run regularly and I thought, oh, he'll come with me on his bike. And we ran around Hyde Park and Kensington Gardens here in London. And we sort of, as I went around, I told him about all the landmarks. So we passed the barracks and I told him what they were. And I told him about the IRA bomb that was there. And then we passed the 7/7 Memorial and we had that chat. We passed Speaker's Corner. We passed the Albert Hall. And it was really brilliant because it initiated this conversation. And he then had so many questions about things he didn't know about and ended up having had like 50 minutes where he was suddenly really engaged with the city that he lives in, which is, I think, is brilliant, age 8.
Yeah, so lovely, and really brings the park to life. And it's not just a walk in the park. There's history, there's geography, there's all kinds of exciting things to find out about if you sort of look into them enough. So I think that's really cool.
And I think, you know, in terms of, you know, education, children who are curious tend to then engage in things a little bit more deeply, you know, whether it be maths or geography or science. Mm. And so giving them a sort of few facts that they can start out with will hopefully, you know, encourage them to kind of get their teeth into education a little bit more, which we all know is a benefit.
Yeah, I think so.
So what can we do to encourage curiosity in children? The sort of million-dollar question.
Well, I mean, starting with my thing that I think that kids are naturally curious, I did look into, when I was thinking about starting my podcast, which answers children's questions, I thought, I want to know, like, how many questions children roughly sort of ask. So I looked, there are quite a lot of studies. And the one I was reading said that curious children ask around 73 questions a day. And the study showed that the peak of this questioning is in four-year-old girls. And apparently four-year-old girls ask 390 questions a day. That's one question every 2 minutes, and the most busy times being meal times. And it said, yeah, more questions are asked by children in an hour than in than a prime minister has to answer in question time. So, I mean, parents have got a tough job.
They do have a tough. I always find my children ask questions as we're sort of getting into the car, yeah. And I'm sort of dealing with bags and have they remember their PE yeah. kit. And they're like, Mummy, how does the internet work? I'm like,
You're like, I don't know, just put your seatbelt on. We're really late. We've got to go.
I remember one of my favourite questions as they were sort of sitting in the back of the car. That's often for me when we have questions. And they went, how do people actually get to heaven? Is there a train? Is there a bus? And I was like, oh, okay.
Let me think about that one.
But it did make me laugh.
Yeah, this study said 4 out of 10 parents feel sort of proud that their kids are very questioning and asking things. And the other 6 out of 10 say they just feel exhausted by it and they don't know. And I also read that it said, well, 90% of mums often find themselves secretly Googling the answer. But I wondered why they were secretly Googling, because I also think it's quite important to let kids know that it's fine not to know the answers. And frankly, like, almost nobody knows anything much about our universe. You know, we all know a tiny fraction of all there is to know. And it's fine to tell children, well, I don't know, but let's find out the answer together. So I think that as much learning facts is one thing, but I think the more important thing is learning how to learn. So learning that curiosity is great, following your curiosity is really important, and how to do that. So let's look in this book, or let's look it up on Google, but this is a good article. And I don't know, just teaching them to help to find ways to find things out themselves.
Because Googling something is something we all take for granted, but you still have to learn how to search effectively.
And what's the sort of good source and what's likely to like not be true, that kind of a thing.
And then even when, you know, because you're not always in a position where you can suddenly say, okay, well, let's find out, like if you are driving in the car. And I suppose then a good response is, well, I don't think I know the answer to that question, but what might the answer be? How do you think we might be able to find out the answer?
Yeah.
What is it definitely not?
Yeah.
And that, I suppose, is then, you know, giving them an answer or giving them an idea, a vehicle to get to the solution themselves, which is the ultimate prize, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And also, who could we ask? Because you might know somebody who would know the answer and they could remember to ask them next time they see them.
And maybe asking them why they're interested in that and what has made them think of that. And
and
that all of those are sort of conversation points.
Yeah.
Any other tips?
About how to make
how to engage sort of curiosity in children. I mean, I always think, you know, encouraging observation. So, you know, we slightly sometimes forget that they see the world through very different eyes to we do. And that can be really illuminating for us. But maybe even talking about your surroundings and what they think about certain things. And, you know, not only are you asking them to think about it, but you're then asking them to, you know, describe it. All of these are really important skills and very often.
So I think when, like you were saying, out in Hyde Park, sort of naming things, talking about things, the stories, I think when you're in the garden, perhaps saying, oh, this is a camellia, or this is a palm tree, like naming things. And so it's not just, that's a bird, do you know what I mean? That's a blackbird, that's a robin. Mm. The different, just making life richer than just, this is an apple, that's a bird. Do you know what I mean? Like bringing...
This is a plant, and did you know some plants are the most poisonous things in the world?
Yes.
And some plants eat flies.
Yeah.
And some plants ooze sticky stuff, and some flowers only bloom for one day of the year and they stink.
Yeah.
and to be honest, even if the facts aren't totally right, you know, you are not on TV, you are not going to be accountable if you've got it slightly wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
And sometimes even making up stuff.
I'm not sure if that's true.
Well, I'm not sure. But also not, I think then that still it sort of engages them.
Yeah, stories and imagination, I mean, it's all just so important, isn't it? I think reading is obviously huge. If your child likes reading, or you reading to them, or audiobooks if they don't like sitting and reading a book. I mean, because that's a real key to just any kind of knowledge, a love of reading. And I suppose letting children see you reading to them, taking them to the library. I think reading is a hugely important thing. Maybe singing songs, talking to people. I mean, people are just such rich minefields of information, and the more chats you have with all kinds of different people, the better, I think, for your kids.
Mm. And remembering that they're always listening. They yeah. might not, they may be contentedly playing in the corner, but they've got an ear on your conversation.
Yeah, totally.
Which means that, you know, you shouldn't probably be swearing or talking about something that's totally inappropriate, but at the same time sort of acknowledging when they do have questions about what you're talking about, and yeah. not being afraid to tell them the truth
that's
about
true.
What they're asking about.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
No, I think you're totally right. I've really enjoyed, especially when I was sort of getting my children into reading, was reading sort of fact books, children's encyclopedias, like your books that you've published. You know, because it's not like you're reading a story.
Yeah.
It's like you're reading little facts that are interesting, but they can read little snippets, you can read little snippets. So it's not like you're giving them a book and they then immerse themselves in it.
Mm.
You can read it together, you can talk about it together, and all of this will sort of give you conversation points.
And look at photographs, illustrations are quite important for books like that, I think.
You know, one thing I was someone recommended to me was, you know, let your children have a hobby, let them collect something, let them develop a passion and support them in that.
Yeah.
So my son collects cacti.
Wow, cool.
And we have a huge cacti selection in his room.
It
can be quite traumatic when one dies, because he does get very sad when that happens. But that has definitely evolved into wanting to know all about plants and all about cacti, and giving him books about that and making him understand that unless he looks after them, they're going to die, and what conditions they thrive in. And very often they'll pick a topic that you have absolutely no interest in or no idea about. So my daughter was obsessed with dinosaurs, and that was just never my thing. But my God, we knew quite a lot about dinosaurs.
Now you do.
at the end of it. Or I remember collecting coins and stamps when I was little. You know, even things like that, you know, that gives them a purpose. It makes them feel proud of something that they own, and a collection that they can then show their friends.
How did the cacti collection start?
With one cactus, and he was just fascinated by it. You know, I've never been innately fascinated by cacti, I've got to admit, but I remember he got this cactus and he just looked at it and thought, this is extraordinary. It's got spikes, maybe it looks a bit scary, maybe it's a little bit dangerous. It's resilient, it survives in the harshest conditions, and he suddenly just wanted to know all about it. And actually there's a little flower shop by my children's school, and they had a little collection of mini cacti. Luckily this coincided with like the trend for people to have cacti in their houses, but you know, he just was absolutely fascinated. And you know, part of me wanted to be like, oh God, so boring. I mean, I really have no interest in cacti. But you have to sort of say, but he is. The person I love so much is into cacti. And so we'd sit and we'd talk about it and we'd read books about them. And actually, I think that was a really important part of his development and definitely kind of aided his curiosity.
That's great. I think, like you say, it's really nice to just follow their lead and they'll teach you things. I mean, my son is only two, but he already just, you know, he's so excited about everything. He's like, oh, it's raining. Whereas we're like, oh, it's raining. He's like, it's raining. And then you just think, you just look at the world afresh through children's eyes, I think, don't you?
Yeah.
And just...
And even sort of in that situation, saying, you know, oh, it's raining. Well, I wonder how much it's going to rain. Why don't we put a cup outside and see how much it rains? And we can
collect
guess.
The rain. That's a good idea.
We have a game first thing in the morning. We drive to school. And before as I turn the car on, I'm like, okay, everyone has to guess the temperature. And actually, that's quite good because they're sort of becoming a bit more aware of what different temperatures feel like.
Yeah, I love that idea.
It pops up on the dashboard.
Yeah.
And
so then they'll be like walking thermometers when they're older. They'll just instantly know exactly what the temperature is, because they'll be so used to feeling it on the way to school.
And I think taking their lead is also important.
Yeah.
You know, realizing that they have to tell you what you're interested in. I think so often, we've gone to the Natural History Museum and I said, I've got an agenda. I'm like, we're going to this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
But actually, we're there for them. We're not there for me.
Yeah.
And we almost need to sit there and go, well, what do you want to look into?
Yes, totally.
And often, you know, it's the rubbish thing that they do want to look into. And I suppose it's that kind of balance of indulging what they want to see, but also then maybe encouraging to something that maybe might be more rewarding for
yeah.
them.
Well, I actually, on my podcast last week, I said, ask children to send in their favourite thing they'd ever seen in a museum. And the answer that I chose was a little girl called Matilda. She said, the best thing I've ever seen in a museum is the dodo, because I've read about them in books, but I've never seen one in real life because they're extinct. But now I saw one in the Natural History Museum. And that was quite interesting because I haven't actually seen that dodo for myself, and I've been to the museum a lot of times. So next time I go, I'm going to look for it. But like, you'd think she'd like the blue whale because it's, you know, the huge thing when you walk in. Oh, the dinosaur. But no, she liked that. And I thought that was quite sweet and really nice. Yeah, you just never know what they're going to like. I mean, the first time I took my son, he just wanted to go up and down the stairs.
Oh, that's so funny. That is so often the way. But yeah. You're right. You know, it's those. And actually, that's a great thing to notice the little thing in an exhibition rather than the thing that you're meant to notice.
Yeah.
And that's a great sort of skill in life.
Yeah, I think so.
I think a lot about it is also encouraging conversation. And you know, the more I think about how our relationship with children becomes, you know, its most rewarding and fruitful, I think it's all around communication. And something I've realized from this podcast, if you can talk to your children in an engaging and purposeful way, you're not only giving them, I think, the greatest skill that you can possibly have. You know, being a great communicator is just something you will never, ever regret. I mean, being a great footballer, fantastic. Mm. But to be honest, give me a communicator of a footballer any time. Mm. But, you know, but how do you do that? How do you encourage that conversation? I mean, for me, one thing that's been great are podcasts, you know, the sort of listen to the audio, you know, word. And sometimes that's, you know, we're listening to the Today program in the morning and they'll talk to me about something. They'll say, what is sex trafficking? And I'm like, oh God, I've got the headspace to do this while I'm making porridge. But, you know, I think they are much more aware of their world around them because they get little, you know, tidbits of information from everyday life.
Yeah. Just noticing the world around them. Listening to stories, listening to the news.
And yeah. I find listening to your podcast, listening to Everything Under the Sun, you know, we will listen to it, but we don't just listen to it. I've often sort of I'll pause it and we'll say, you know, I'll either fill them in on a bit of knowledge that they don't have, or we'll talk about something that might be more relevant to us or that we've experienced. Do you remember when we saw those tortoises in whatever? And do you remember how big their shells were? And remember what their poos looked like? And I think that is sort of quite a good way to have a conversation.
Oh, well, I'm really pleased, yeah. Yeah, because I hoped it would sort of spark conversations in families, because it's obviously designed as a family podcast. I mean, it's answering children's questions. That's the concept of Everything Under the Sun. But I think that children are obviously going to be listening with their parents because they're the ones downloading the podcast onto their phone, at least initially. So it's lovely to think that it's sort of inspiring chats about all kinds of unusual things like owls and fish and...
And when you get a conversation, you know, a question that you feel isn't appropriate them to listen to, I think it's okay to say, listen, it's a really complicated issue, this, and I'll tell you a little bit about it, but it's something that you'll be able to understand a little bit better when you're older, rather than saying that it's not appropriate. Because I think a lot about our relationship with children is trust.
Mm.
And, you know, I remember being frustrated as a child that I wasn't allowed to do something or see something or hear something because of my age.
Oh, yeah, it's like a film or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And part of that is part of life, but at the same time, I think you need to acknowledge that, you know, you need to encourage that curiosity rather than sort of, you know, put it out.
This is not for you.
Yeah. So I think you have to be careful with how you engage with them. But sort of, I think they are better thinkers and better understanders than we potentially give them credit for, especially because they're always older. They're always, you know, they're always getting older and they are maturing. And, you know, so one week is going to be different to the previous week.
Yes. Well, to be honest, the questions I get for Everything Under the Sun are always really hard.
Are they?
I mean, like, I open my inbox and it'll say, what's in a black hole? Who invented the universe? Why do we have to die? And I'm like, oh my goodness, these are big questions. I've just woken up. And I also regularly think, I wish Brian Cox was my friend because he's very good at explaining things to children. But I've been super lucky that lots of experts have come on board. So lots of the scientists from the Natural History Museum, the V&A, the Science Museum, they are all really into it and loving answering children's questions, because it's a great way for them to share their knowledge. And also the children's questions are genuinely interesting.
Yeah. One thing I've noticed on your podcast is when children ask you questions, it's not just a sort of one sentence answer.
No.
And I think that is a really good teaching point in terms of how we answer questions. Mm. You know, there's never, you know, if there is one question about owls, you then talk all about owls' behavior and how they work and yes. how they see and hear and kill and all of that kind of thing, which makes it so much more interesting.
Yes, I hope so.
How do you choose the question? I mean, because obviously you get lots of questions and you can't answer every question.
Yeah.
Do you look specifically for questions that have a sort of broader answer or...
I'm aiming to answer every question I get sent, but I don't know if that's going to end up being possible. But so far, I mean, I've just picked one that I feel like, oh, I quite fancy finding out the answer to that one. Or I've themed them a little bit. So one week we did an episode with the Natural History Museum about their exhibition, Life in the Dark. So then I picked questions that had been sent in about, like you say, owls. There was another one about, are any fish nocturnal, which the fish curator from the museum answered. And then I've also thought, well, that's an interesting question. Can I find a good expert to answer that? So I got asked last week, why can we not taste as well as usual when we have a cold? And I thought, well, that would be a good question for someone like Heston Blumenthal, because he's so into food and senses. And so I sent his producer the question and he's answered it for me. So I'm kind of thinking, oh, who would be cool to answer this question? What question am I interested in? And also, I don't really want any child's question to go unanswered. So I think this could take me a while to kind of get through all the questions.
You talked about some questions that you thought, oh my, a black hole. Have you answered that question yet?
I haven't yet, but I really do feel like that could be one for an expert. So yeah, I'm definitely going to answer it, but a lot of them, I obviously don't know the answer. I have to sit down and look it up. I have to ring somebody and find out the answer. So I'm also learning a lot as well.
And also, presumably, not all the questions are great, although I suppose they are slightly curated by the parents, because I get questions from my children that are really thought-provoking, and I think, what a brilliant question. And then the other day, my daughter said, what's orange juice made from? I'm like, oranges.
Oranges. That is quite straightforward to answer that one. But there might be some other question about orange juice that could be really good. I don't know. I'd probably find a way to answer any question, to be honest. I can tell it all about oranges, and there's only one word in the world that in the English language that rhymes with orange, which is blorange. Which is a place, I think.
I was about to say, have you just made that word up?
It's true. It's a QI fact.
I mean, I listen to podcasts a lot with them in the car, and I find that car journeys are a really nice way to engage with my children. There is research to show that actually you have a more productive conversation, especially it's a bit more difficult conversation if you're not looking at each other straight in the eye.
Yeah.
But if you're walking and talking or driving, because you're focusing on driving or you're sort of looking ahead, you're not looking at each other.
Yeah.
And I think really sadly, a lot of parents now just chuck their kids an iPad and they just like hooked into a screen for this whole journey. And I remember sitting on long journeys and just looking out the window. I still love it. I still find it really calming and it allows my mind to wander.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, having a sort of rule that maybe you don't have screens in the car, but you're having, you know, podcasts or you're listening to the radio or you're having these or even sort of playing games. I mean,
I mean
that slightly kills me, I spy, because you know, you try so hard to sort of think about what they're thinking of and then they've spelt it wrong.
Isn't that quite classic? I spy something beginning with P and then it's like a tree.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
But that doesn't start with P.
But even things like, which are quite much more fun, like a game of Would You Rather. And you can be quite outlandish and you can be silly if they're a silly mood, or you can be, you know, really thoughtful, or you can, you know, relate it to what they're interested in. You know, would you rather be a cacti or an oak tree? Cactus or an oak tree?
Well, I think you know the answer to that one.
Yeah, a cactus in my son's room. That's what I'd like to be. But, you know, that kind of thing is really good at getting them to think about not just facts, but about using those facts to formulate an opinion and then articulating that argument to explain why they'd rather be the thing. But then also thinking about why other people would want to be the other thing.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think you very often, because children think in a different way to to us, they can really entertain us with their thinking around that topic.
Mm.
And then the car journey is done and you haven't had a screen.
Hooray!
So you're the author of three books,
yes.
Which I really have enjoyed. They are, it's Wonders of the World Museums and The Secret Museum. Those are the two that are published. And the third, has it been published?
Natural Wonders of the World is coming out on the 7th of February, so very soon.
Good. Very, yeah. Very exciting. And yeah. Did you always want to be an author? How did these books come about?
Well, The Secret Museum was the first book that I wrote. And that came about because when I was working on QI, we got an email from the fish curators at the Natural History Museum in London saying, who are called Ollie and James, there are two of them who look after all the fish, and they said, can we come and watch QI please, being recorded? And we replied saying, yeah, of course, come, but can we come see what you do too? So a couple of us, like five of us QI elves, went off and spent an afternoon with Ollie and James behind the scenes in the fish collection at the museum, and they showed us Archie the giant squid, who's in this huge Perspex case that was designed by Damien Hirst's team. And he's so big that he can't be in the museum floor. It has to be on a basement of, because it could fall through the floor. We saw big tanks like full of sharks. And they told us that Speedo had been there designing Olympic swimwear, like based on shark skin. And we saw specimens collected by Darwin on the Beagle with his handwriting written on. And it was just a real eye-opener, because I had not realised that a museum only displays 1% of its collection. 99% of most museums around the world's collection are in storage. And mostly they're a working collection, so scientists will come and study those things, but the public can't see them. So I completely naively called a couple of other museums. I like sort of rung the science museums and said, do you have anything in storage? And they said, yes, 99% of our collection. And that ended up being the case in all the museums I rang. So then I started going to look with the curators at all the things you can't see, and wrote a book about it. So I ended up choosing one object in each collection that you'll never get to see and has a great story, and wrote about. So Van Gogh's sketchbooks, spacesuits covered in moon dust at the Smithsonian, a piece of Isaac Newton's apple tree that he was sitting underneath when the apple fell and he thought, why did that go down? And yeah, I mean, you could write that book about 50 times over, because whoever would write it would be interested in different things. And also there's just so many stories and so many interesting things. But yeah, that's how that book came about.
And why aren't we able to see these? Surely they rotate them. I mean, it would be so interesting, surely, to see, you know, Van Gogh's sketchbooks.
Well, a lot of it is because they're so in the case of Van Gogh's sketchbooks, they're incredibly fragile, sensitive to the light. So if you leave it out on a museum display, then it will just degrade over time. So it's so precious that they just keep it in a box down in the basement of the Van Gogh Museum.
I sort of wonder whether it's even worth keeping it, but no one's going to see it.
Well, it's still there. I love to know these things exist.
Yeah.
And are being cared for. And if you were writing a book about Van Gogh, you could go and see them, obviously.
Yeah.
You can request to see anything you like in
can
a museum.
Can you? So anyone can go, just call them up and say, do you have to request to see something specific? Or can you say, can we just come behind the scenes and have a look?
I think generally you need to see something specific. But say I went to behind the scenes at the V&A, and I went into a room which was full of shoes that had been collected from like the 15th century up to now. And there was a well-known jewellery designer in there just looking at the shoes for inspiration for her collection. And they're really open to that kind of a thing. Like, it's a working collection. It's there to be used. But I don't think they'd want everyone pitching up just being like, can I have a look? But the V&A, for example, they're building a whole new facility out in East London near the Olympic Stadium, and a lot more of their collection is going to be visible. Not that you can sort of get up close, but you can see it behind the glass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Wonders of the World's Museums, just book two of that.
Well, that's for children. And I wanted to do a version of The Secret Museum for children, but my publisher thought that it would be frustrating for children to read about things they'll never get to see, which I'm not sure if that's the case. But anyway, they wanted to do something which was the things that you can see. So Wonders of the World's Museums is sort of a collection of some of the best things in big museums around the world for children. So the idea is you can open the book, think, oh, what's at the Natural History Museum, because we're going to go next week, and read about Hope, the blue whale that hangs from the ceiling. So when you go with your little one, they already know something that they're going to be looking out for and a bit about it. So stories of some of the big artifacts.
Do you think museums could be better?
I actually think they are really quite good at engaging children. Like, there's lots of free, I mean, I'm at the little toddler stage, but a lot of the museums do free activities for kids. They try to encourage children to come. The V&A Museum of Childhood work with the Globe Primary School, which is their local primary school, and they've got an exhibition on about pirates at the moment, and they got the kids from the school to really help to put together that exhibition. So I think they're quite good with little ones. And there's a nice Instagram person that I follow called Milk at the Museum. She's always posting about like free things to do with kids in museums, which is really nice. But I mean, could they be better?
I don't know. I really like museums.
I totally agree. I think that I love going into museums. I love immersing myself. And I usually go and see a small part of a museum and get really into it rather than trying to see the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I remember about 6 or 7 years ago, I was in San Francisco and we went to Alcatraz, which is essentially a museum of what it was like to be
included in
a
my book.
Prison.
Yeah.
And that is an amazing museum. And what for me was so wonderful was that audio experience.
Yeah.
I think they'd produced it so well. Mm. And I think, you know, to get a sort of 9-year-old interested in what they're seeing, that audio experience enhanced it so much. And I think that so often you go to the museums and they're beautifully displayed, but then the information is sort of written somewhere.
I agree, there's not enough information. Yeah.
And now in the world where, you know, we've all got iPhones, we've all probably got some headphones, is there a way to maybe make it a bit more interactive or a bit more, you know, rather than reading something, to listen to something? Because if you're listening to something, you can have the sound effects and you can have the passion, you can have the different bits. I don't know.
That's a good idea. Yeah. I should turn my book into an app, where if you go to the Natural History Museum, you can hear all about the story of hope and see photographs and also hear like noises of different blue whales and things like that. That would be quite cool.
And with QI codes, I don't see why. Are they called QI codes? Those codes that you sort of scan on your phone and then it takes you somewhere?
Possibly.
QR codes, they're called. Anyway,
that would be a different version.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The quite interesting version of museum exhibits.
Perfect. And well, it has been so lovely chatting to you, Molly. Really, really wonderful. I think all our listeners will agree that you are very engaging. Your podcast is very interesting and easy to listen to. So thank you so much. I've been wanting a sort of children's fact-based podcast for a long time. So I was delighted when a friend recommended yours to me, and you've topped the iTunes charts. It's doing really well, isn't it?
It has done really well. Yeah, it went straight in at number one. And then over Christmas, it was number one as well. But that's because we had a great writer, Neil Gaiman, was doing a story about whether or not Mrs. Christmas helps Father Christmas to decide who's been naughty or nice.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've loved chatting about curiosity. I heard the other day that Albert Einstein didn't think of himself as a genius, but just curious. Apparently he said, "I have no special talent. I am only passionately curious," which shows just how far simple curiosity can get you. Do follow Molly on Instagram and Twitter. On Instagram, she's at Molly Oldfield Writes, and on Twitter, it's Molly Oldfield. Her podcast, Everything Under the Sun, is truly brilliant, and I would urge all of you to download it now. And her books, Secret Museum, The Wonders of the World's Museums, are the perfect book to sit down with your children and unlock that important curiosity with. Yes, and her new book, Natural Wonders of the World, also for children, is coming out beginning of February, 7th of February, so hopefully by the time you listen to this, it will be available. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Parenthood. If you haven't already, please do subscribe, rate and review us. And do tell us what you want to hear about. I'm on Instagram at marina.fogel, and that's the best way to get in touch with me. But in the meantime, from Molly and me, thank you for listening and goodbye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.